something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on Taggart and Torrance,
we dip into Harry's mailbag.
I'll teach Jeremy how to clap his turd cutter.
And we'll share some stories of the road of getting banged up.
That's all coming up right now on TNT.
Where's my beer chair?
Well, hello there, Jonathan.
Jeremy, how are you today?
I'm doing great.
Another week has passed us by.
Another week has passed us by, and I do believe you have suffered a little bit of the old after-gig blues with some laryngitis, I heard.
I had what doctors call a bit of the laryngitis, and it's weird. I don't know if you know this about me, but I like to talk a fair bit.
Sure.
And it's strange to suddenly not have your voice to be able to express yourself.
Yeah, that is got to be. Are you like writing down on a, were you writing on a chalkboard a little bit or what?
Well, I didn't, it wasn't like full Nell, but I just found myself getting quickly to the, you know what? Why bother? I'm not even going to say it because it's so hard for everyone to hear me. And it was, let's be honest, it was 36 hours of no voice. But I don't mean like my voice was hoarse. I mean zero voice. Like, can't muster a whisper. It was really weird.
I've had that maybe once in my life, and it is really odd.
Well, this is the thing I often wonder about. I was scheduled to work the next day, so I went to a doctor, and everybody has a different theory about what you have to do. Turns out there's this stuff called throat coat, which you probably know about.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a herbal tea kind of deal, and that really worked well. When you're a rocker and there's an arena of ticket-buying people, what ailment is enough for you to say, guys, I can't go out there? What do you do if you have, for example, GI trouble or you feel like vomiting?
Well, I've had migraines. I've played through those. I've had to... I've been sick with the flu. I don't think there's anything that can really knock you out. But for a singer, if you can't sing, then you can't really play. So you know, that's happened many times. There's no voice there, and singer can't do the job. I remember a couple times where you'd have to cancel something just because of that, but when you can't sing, you can't, it's better than playing and trying, right. You know what I mean? People probably won't come back.
I have to assume that playing the drums in a rock band with a migraine is about as close to hell as you can get.
Yeah, it was good. I had a bucket there for throwing up in, and I remember it happened a couple times. Once at Nathan Phillips Square, like way early, in like 1995 or 6 or something. And then on the Van Halen tour as well, around that same time, actually 95. And the Van Halen opening, that it was in Boston. And there was this like sunset where I think it was the Woodlands or something. But you could literally, the sun shines right into you from the stage, so I had to set my drums up backwards, facing back.
Because the light was too painful?
Yeah. So
crazy.
That was crazy, too. Facing my back, rock and roll.
So is it hard to keep it together, or do you just kind of get through it a song at a time?
It actually helps to play. Because you're out of it a bit in terms of when you're actually performing and playing drums, or you're connecting to the time, so you're kind of out of it. You're escaping, so it's a like meditation. So you don't feel it until you finish, or if you're not playing well and not thinking, or thinking too much, and then you're thinking about the headache, and that's not good. So you have to kind of get out of it. So it's not bad. I know if I'd ever had a migraine, if you run your head under a shower, at least it's something consistent and constant to focus your mind on something else. Because that's what the annoyance of a migraine is. It just kind of changes just a little bit, and it's this constant like variances of spiky, horrific pain in your head. But it's never the same that you get used to. It's always just kind of changing and manipulative. So if you can combat that feeling with something like a, you know, water on your face or something to keep your mind off it, or, you know, breathing slowly and focusing, it definitely helps.
This is what I always wonder, though. You say, I have a migraine, and I say, yeah, I know what you mean. But maybe your migraine is light years worse than the thing that I'm imagining.
Well, have you ever...
Like, it sounds like it is.
Do you get, like, the you can't see, and then all of a sudden you start to throw up, and then the headache comes after that?
No, I've had debilitating headaches, but nothing to that extreme.
Yeah, a migraine is the actual, I guess, the description of the... I guess people say it's something that you have because it doesn't go away. So it's kind of like a disease in a sense. And when you get it, and it is just the migraine comes, and it comes usually with an aura, they call, which is like a visual thing that kind of, you can't see in one little spot. And then all of a sudden it gets bigger and bigger. And all of a sudden you really can't see half of your vision. So it's terrible if you're having to drive or something. So that's how it starts, and that goes for about an hour, and you get to the point where you can't see anything, and it's just this big constant like barrage of like psychedelic light, awful colors on your eye that's just buzzing, and that just, you know, goes away, and then the headache sort of starts to creep in with nauseous, horrific feelings, and it can last for like five hours. So
and
it's
triggered
terrible.
By what? Like the barometer, circumstances?
Sometimes, you know, sometimes stress, sometimes a diet. When I was a kid, I used to get them like twice a month. And I would always get them for some reason, like Tuesday evenings or, you know, at certain times of the seasons changing, or hot dogs, like the MSG or processed meats. I started to collect all these different things that I couldn't digest or ingest to avoid, like chocolate and citrus fruits and cologne and heavy cheeses and just all of these things that were...
That sounds like the lineup at this year's Glastonbury Festival.
Yeah, totally.
The processed
heavy cheeses.
Heavy cheeses.
Yeah, I gotta go see Heavy Cheeses at 5 o'clock.
Hey, have you ever played Banged Up?
Oh, for sure. You know, when I... started drinking in 2003, absolutely. I was banged up probably most later in the show.
Wait, hold the wedding. How old were you in
2003? 33.
That's when you started drinking?
Or no, 28 is when I started drinking. So I was...
You'd never had a drink before, or you kind of social drank at 28 when it started getting heavy?
Yeah, I started drinking, and then I started drinking just constantly heavy, and it was right around that time.
And, wow.
For probably that 28 to 2008, so I guess 2002 or so, 2003 to 2008, I was just a wrecking ball, full bore, a tested alcoholic, true and true.
So do you build up a tolerance to playing drums wasted the same way you build up a tolerance to alcohol itself?
I think we've all seen musicians that kind of just can go through it. I mean, some of our favorite bands in history are all drunk by the end of the set. Even, you know, the Van Morrisons and the Band and Neil
Doug
Young.
And yeah, yeah.
That was kind of part of the thing. It's just they knew... I guess inside that how much was too much. And for me, four or five beers definitely wasn't going to get me to that level. So I was never that banged up playing the shows. It was always after the show and when you're on the bus and then, you know, keeping it going up two, three in the morning. That's when you start getting really staggery and you don't want to be playing shows at that point.
Yeah, have you ever crossed paths with Stomp and Tom out on the road?
Yeah, I met him a couple times. I think once we in Manitoba. I think he was at the Sunfest. I don't know if you remember that. There was a festival they had there, and it's one of our first bigger shows. And yeah, meeting him was, and he was always at that. I'm sure you understand when he was out and about and doing his thing. He was really people oriented, so you just kind of flew under the radar in a sense. Like he just.
Yep.
Talking to everybody and just hanging out, and so you didn't really know what he did, and it kind of took me years to understand how big a deal he was. Did you ever meet him?
No, I never did. And from all the road stories you hear, I worked on a Canada Day special on CBC one year when he was the musical guest, and just the strange requests, like, you know, three flats of pea warm beer and a carton of Export A greens.
Yeah.
Like, that's for breakfast.
That's it.
Man.
Diet.
That was his diet, yeah.
Well, I remember hearing stories about the band, you know, in the, like, the tour they did in the late 80s. I remember they were playing without Robertson, and Billy Preston, I think, was on as the guesting, filling in, but everybody else was still there. But I just heard these stories, and one in particular of them going to a bar all day and the promoter having to go grab them, and they literally were staggering, like falling down, going to the stage. And as soon as they got on their instruments, they were just killing it and nobody could tell.
Crazy.
Yeah. So I don't know. You hear these weird
functioning alcoholics.
Well, that, yeah. And it's just like the muscle memory thing, and you go into another mode and you're just performing, and that's part of the thing. You just can't really perform poorly. I mean, eventually it starts to catch up and you can't, but
well, I read Slash's autobiography. Have you read it?
I've read enough of excerpts and the stories of hearing him talk people about it, but there's some spectacular ones in there for sure. Man,
unreal.
Those guys.
Unreal. And on drugs, like recording everything, and for every video that we grew up watching and all that stuff. And
gunned out of his mind.
Gunned and running naked through glass shower walls and out into the fairways of golf courses with bloody feet like crazy. But at the same time, talking in great detail about trying to achieve just the right tonal quality through an amp setup.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. His when you're in that mode, it's like his focus is to play guitar well, and he's already a great guitar player. So he's like, well, he's not deaf; he can hear. So if you think about it, his own focus is one thing. So it's he ends up probably having a lot of spare time in a day. And what are you going to do with spare time? And what kills you the most is you know, getting by with the odd pill or, you know, a couple drinks, and next thing you know, it's just that snowballs into madness, and you kind of have to be, you know, I guess they would say, like, they're medicinalizing themselves through all of these little drugs, and it becomes completely normal because you hear that your whole life about everybody that you loved growing up, you know, from Johnny Cash to Charlie Parker.
Carson. Sure.
Every single person, they had this massive period of, like, trying to deal with drugs, and it makes sense that it's got most to do with the most sensational thing, which is boredom and spare time.
See, that is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
22 hours a day of thumb twiddling.
Yes.
That's where you must run into trouble. It's not the playing.
Yeah, right. Actresses and actors that are young and they just have way too much time on their hands. Look at Bieber, and it's like the stuff that they get into, it's maximum use of just downtime and way too much.
This might come as a surprise. I was really wasted the entire time I was doing Street Sense.
Come on.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not.
That would have been great if you could have been like a closet of vodka.
Right.
Man.
No, I wasn't. I traveled so much and I was working so much, and I didn't have much time to go to high school, and I still worked at McDonald's. And it was at the time when at McDonald's you get a free meal every shift you worked. So in high school, I'd go work an 11 to 2 shift.
I cannot imagine. I cannot imagine how much you must have killed it when someone was ordering something at McDonald's.
I got into trouble for drive-through headset sass, I won't lie.
Were you just going, like, looking at this as my outlet? This is all I have right now. This is how I can kind of
do. So one time a guy was coming through, and he kept saying, beep, beep, take my order, bitch, take my order, bitch. And I was like, one moment, sir, I'll be right with you. Hey, beep, beep, take my order, bitch. So I finally said, is your date being paid by the hour, bud? I said, just a second, pump the brakes on the aggression. And he pulled into the parking lot and came running into the store and he was like, where is that little pecker that's in drive-thru? And I'll be honest, I was hiding in the meat freezer.
Yeah, for sure.
But I couldn't curb the jokes on the drive-thru headset because it would be funny to get a little lip back from the kid wearing the headset.
For sure.
I didn't drink in those days. In my early teen years, I did. But in my sort of later teen years, in early 20s when I was on Street Sense, I would go to a party with a quart of Bailey's and 4 liters of milk.
Greasy.
And I'd drink Bailey's and milk all night, get the bloats, not even catch a buzz, and sleep it off.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is like, I don't know. That's like the unpopular overweight girl in high school getting banged.
That's
up.
What I was. You couldn't chainsaw through my teeth. I had so much calcium in those days. Now, of course, I like to tee up a pitcher of dirty bananas as much as the next guy. But I went through a phase where I abstained from alcohol entirely, and then a phase where it was Bailey's and milk all the way.
That's just so odd, just because it's so tasty, right?
Yeah, it's tasty.
It never gets old.
Yeah, it's like eggnog all year long.
But you can get really banged up on Bailey's. I remember Jets and my brother's... We were up in North Bay at his friend's cottage or something, and the girls were getting into the Baileys on his ice, and his wife.
Were they?
His wife just got hammered on Baileys, but it was just Baileys, and she was like as tanked as you can be. So that stuff.
What's a Baileys drunk like?
Well, I mean, just like anything else, it was. I'm just saying that you can definitely get plastered on that stuff.
I just love to be involved in an altercation with a bouncer in a nightclub.
Oh, man.
And have to explain, it's okay, dude. She's had a lot of Baileys.
Well, that's true, though. The girls, they'll have like 16 Bailey shots. And
like, can you even drink it if you're not wearing a turtleneck? Doesn't it have to be in the ski lodge?
That's so funny. I think my brother James would have a Bailey's rip once in a while just to sweeten it up because it's like having a Rolo while you're having some drinks.
Right. Well, you might as well just keep it above the fridge and take a little pull on it in the middle of the day. A little after lunch.
That's why people have it in coffee, right? Just like because it's so sweet. That's okay.
What was your poison, by the way?
Well, it was gin until I couldn't drink gin anymore.
Yeah.
And just literally, it was like, you know, when you got too banged up on something. I remember one night in Hawaii, I was drinking gin, and I was in this little bar in Paia. And, like, one of the last things I remember, was, like, starting a conga line in the bar. And it was, like, 35 people in a circle in a conga line. I got it going.
You were that guy.
I was at that night, and then calling Lars Ulrich's phone and leaving a big long message on it because the engineer at the time was working was with Bob Rock, who was doing Metallica at the same time. So I was like talking to Lars or leaving a message to Lars.
Oh man,
just hammered. Anyway, the next morning it was like I felt like I was dead. I couldn't do anything. I literally had, I was lying down, throwing up in the driveway, and all of a sudden I hear this honking, and it's like Bob Rock's family trying to come up the driveway.
Oh my god.
I'm lying on their driveway.
Hideous.
Throwing up into the, those, you know, super expensive plants.
So did he, like, you're treading water in the koi pond?
I was like, they couldn't pass me because I was lying in their driveway throwing up into those, what are those really nice, those flower trees, you know, the ones I'm talking about you see in Hawaii?
Yeah.
They're called like the goddess of the garden or the dragon of the something.
They were coming back from ultimate practice.
They're like $1,100 a plant, one of those ones.
So did Bob Rock have to give you a come to Jesus?
No, he was kind of like enjoying it more. This was the first few times for him it seemed me like that. So I think he was more laughing that I was feeling so bad.
Right.
So no, he was all right with that. But that was gin. I was done with gin. I could never do it again. And then I went to just vodka or whatever else. I stayed away from the dark stuff.
I think it was a quart of gin straight by myself in grade 11.
Nice.
And I was running.
That's down. Called a queen mother, by the way, doing that.
Is it?
If you can rip a quick bottle of gin on your own, that's what she did every day of her life.
Did she really?
Yeah. Yep.
I was running down train tracks and a train was coming behind me and I was so out of her that I thought I should probably try to run as fast as I could instead of just stepping to the side and letting the train go through. I tripped and rolled off the train tracks and Whoa. Went into the ditch and the train went by. It was Whoa. Full Stand By Me. Like I should not be here.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, it was wild. I haven't had a drink of gin since. That it has that kind of quality that once you're done with it, you're done with it.
You're like the Canadian Will Wheaton.
Yeah, well, that's what it says on my business card.
Nice. The blue, what's the seed or the plant that they make gin with?
I don't know.
I don't know if it's juniper or whatever the heck it is, but I'll tell you what, that would explain the blue blood thing. Because the gin is pretty heavy with the kings and the queens.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they like them dry.
Straight up.
Did I ever tell you about the time I met Queen Elizabeth?
I don't think so. This is a nice one.
CBC's 50th anniversary, they invited some Gordon Pinsents and some Rick Mercers and other folks to meet the Queen.
Nice.
And you go to Queen Protocol Camp. And so for weeks beforehand, they're drilling it into us. Don't riff and spritz with the queen. Don't improvise with the queen. You stick to the script. And the script was, Your Majesty, for 50 years, the CBC has been a place where Canadians from coast to coast to coast come to laugh. Our, jolly japes and wonderful jokes are known the countrywide, whatever. So they just kept saying, just stick to the script. No matter what she says, stick to the script. So you can imagine how boring it is being the queen.
Yeah.
She gets trotted around all these things. It's however many decades doing this. So I see the queen come up to Gordon Pinsent, and the woman who's leading the queen around said, this is Gordon Pinsent. Gordon does his thing, and he's charming and gracious and laughing and riffing and spritzing with the queen.
Yeah.
The woman comes to me and says, and this is Jonathan. He's a performer and producer in the children's department here. And the queen says, first of all, you're having kind of an out-of-body experience because it's a queen. It's the actual queen standing in front of you. She looks just like the queen. Except
you're looking in her eyes.
2 feet from your face, and she's looking at you.
Yeah.
And the woman introducing me says,
This is money talking, the money talks thing.
That's what it looked like, the back of a quarter, except real. And You're doing a few things. One is you're looking at the queen. The second thing is you're suppressing every urge. Like, what would happen if I punched the queen in the face right now?
Yeah,
who would attack me? Which are the guys with the ear pieces? What if I kissed the queen? And her husband was there too. So the queen says, oh, you're a producer too. And all I can think is don't stray from the script. So I say, yeah. But Your Majesty, the CBC is also a place to laugh. I dissed the queen. And went into my script, and I could see her check out, and she stopped listening when she realized I was on Robo Queen.
Yeah.
So I get through my spiel, she walks on, and her husband walks up behind her, and he says, what do you do here? And I said, oh, I'm a performer in the children's department. And he points over my head behind me and says, is that you there? And I turn around, and there was a picture of a bunch of puppets from Sesame Park.
What the heck?
When I turn back around to say, oh, good, he's gone.
Oh,
Prince Philip dissed me, too. Queen and Prince Philip dissed me in the space of about 45 seconds.
But he did it in a really creative way, though.
Oh, yeah, it was solid. Speaking of gin, like, he had all the rosacea and other hints he likes to take a little pull.
For sure. I remember I met Joe Cocker once. And he had that, like, look, the red, and he had this, like, cup in his hand, and it was after a show, and it was like the cup reeked. The cup was just like some like concoction. I could like who knows what was in there, but it was definitely strong.
We used to call it moose piss. Did you take like an ounce of everything in your folks' liquor cabinet?
The all sorts?
Is that what you called it? All sorts?
Well, I think that's what it is. It was called back in the barrels in the old days in England.
Yeah.
The leftovers, for sure.
Gross. No, was never, Ronnie on the liquor?
No, no. Whenever, the few times my dad did drink, it was always bad. So he kind of abstained from drinking just because it was normally, I don't know, it would be around the holidays and it would just wreck the holiday because it would always get ugly every single time. Never good.
So to the point really where it's like,
what's that?
He can't really handle it.
No, no, it's bad. His father, died. My grandfather actually died in a hospital with, you know, water on the brain from drinking.
Wow.
Alone with nobody. So in New York City. So like left behind for years with, you know, I guess backed away and took himself out from drinking, so it definitely has a bad space in the family.
Crazy. Well, there are two typical behaviors of adult children of alcoholics. One is you abstain. The second is you tend to follow suit.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Don't kind of cradle both.
Sometimes you do a little bit of both.
Yes. Let's get into another gear and move on to some of these wonderful hairy mailbag. Let's call it
the hairy mailbag. Some questions in the hairy mailbag. Let's take a little break real quick.
Yeah.
We'll reset. And we'll dip into some questions from the hairy mailbag right here on TNT. So we put out a question to the folks on the Twitter machine, soliciting questions for us. And it was kind of a last minute thing, but we thought it might be fun. In the future, we hope to take some calls. But for now, yes, we got your Twitter questions. This one is from Beav. Original Beav has some good questions. This is just one of them. If you weren't doing whatever the hell it is you guys do now, what would you have chosen as a career path? Jeremy Taggart.
I definitely would be doing this kind of stuff. More TNT type things.
You think?
Talking. I do love to play, and that's never going to stop, playing drums. But I definitely like chatting and talking and sharing conversation and opinion with others that I respect. It's exciting and fun. I like it. Yourself?
What I'd be doing? Well, I always thought when I was a kid that I would be a stockbroker.
Really?
Yeah, I think I don't know if it was from watching, I don't know, Street Legal or one of those. What was the Canadian show about the stockbroker?
That's it. Traders? That's the one, I think.
No, Street Legal was lawyer. Street Legal was lawyers.
Yeah, I think it was Traders.
I think what I'm grow up watching. I think did you? What I liked about the notion was that there were guys on the trading floor getting really frustrated, throwing tickets up in the air. I think I liked the drama of it.
Did you ever try it?
No. No.
Do you ever look at this like stocks or economic stuff?
A little bit when I was a kid. You have to remember, it was also like peak Alex P. Keaton kind of time.
Yeah,
when he was like a guy that people wanted to be, the kid on Family Ties.
Yeah.
Here's a question. This one's from Beef too. What's with the number 7? For those who don't know, you certainly used to wear a lot of shirts with the number 7 on it.
I did.
Your Twitter handle is Taggart7. What's with the 7?
My birthday was April 7th. And I played baseball growing up, and I was always number 7, and I loved... my dad used to, you know, being from the Bronx, I was always my dad wasn't from the Bronx, but he lived there as a kid and was a Giants and obviously subsequently Yankees fan. When the Giants and the Dodgers left, he still kind of followed just because it was still in the Bronx to some degree to the Yankees. So, you know, I was always Man, I've lost the train of thought on that one, Jonathan.
That's all right, bud.
Yeah.
Crashed the bus in the Bronx.
I did. Where are we?
You're on the number seven. Headed right to the Bronx.
I went from baseball to the Yankees and my dad in New York. It's difficult to come back from that.
You completely fictionalized your upbringing.
I was definitely a big Mickey Mantle fan. And he was number 7, so I kind of grew up liking that number through that, and then even getting older, listening to the stories about Mickey Mantle, got me back to the number 7 as well. So, and I was born at 7:37 in the morning, and Just lots of luck to the number. There's so many great players and athletes that have that number too.
It's true. And it is even traditionally a number of luck.
Absolutely.
This for one sure. From Bronwyn Snyder, who asks, did you, Jonathan Torrance, prefer the earlier or later incarnation of Street Sense? So in the early days of Street Sense, there were kind of sketch comedy elements, almost like a sitcom with Ken Pompadour, who worked for the evil company Byco, and the boss would send down cutbacks and things like that.
So it was like a show with like skits and everything, and it just totally turned into Marketplace for kids, right?
Yeah, it did by the end of it. And and I think the work all the way through was noble. For me, as a TV school, the thing about the early Street Sense years was I got to learn how to do some kind of straight hosting, just talking straight to camera about products. I got to learn how to do some kind of sketch acting and some impersonation. So I would definitely say the earlier version of it was like TV school. Jeremy Taggart, have you ever partied in Sudbury?
Oh, many times. to the point where I don't even remember where or what. But yes.
It's an oddly specific question.
Many good times in Sudbury.
Many good times in Canada.
Probably that I'm going to take that gap that I had in the last seven story had to do with probably partying in Sudbury.
There you go. Hard.
Yeah.
That's where how you started to like the number seven story was left.
I kind of love how I was so lost there. I kind of want to hear how that sounds.
I was into it.
Yeah, that's good.
Someone asked, and I can't find their name just at the moment. Someone asked to hear stories from the Joe Schmo experience.
Yeah, I remember that. That was like a well-loved show that never got its due.
There it is, Sonny Mack. Love to hear Torrance stories from the show, Joe Schmo. That show was brilliant. So for those who don't know, the Joe Schmo show was a fake reality show. And the idea was you get all the stereotypes that might appear on a reality show and put one played by actors. And you put one real person in the mix and they don't know everyone else is an actor. So my season was styled kind of after The Bachelor. So The Bachelor and The Bachelorette were actually actors. And one of the male suitors and one of the female suitors were real people. So the very first day, it's obviously a very big lie. I was playing a character named Geralt, the gotta be gay guy. You think he's gay, but you're not really sure. And the very first thing that happened, because this show parodied all the other reality shows, on the initial arrival, there was what was called the black ball eviction ceremony. So all the people of visible ethnicity were given their walking papers by the Bachelor and Bachelorette.
Come on.
Something you could never anticipate during that opening scene, the Jane Schmo, the girl, her mic goes down because her battery died. Audio guy walks in to change the battery. She strikes up a conversation with the person next to her, who is an African-American woman just hired to be one of the people evicted. Jane Schmo, who is a real sharp cookie, says, "How did they find you for this?" The woman says, "Oh, my agent called me yesterday." And Jane Schmo had been going through months of psychological testing, background checks, all this stuff, because they had to make sure she was a good candidate to be the Jane Schmo. So her back was up and red flags were raised before we were even in the house.
Wow.
So we ultimately ended up bringing her over to the side of the actors and saying, "Okay, you were right. You were on to us." So we brought in another Jane Schmo. Meantime, what no one could have anticipated is that our guy Schmo actually fell in love with the Bachelorette.
No way.
So the idea was during the big reveal in the 10th episode, the big, like, guess what? This whole thing was a joke and we're all actors and here's a check for $100,000. When the Bachelorette says to this Joe Schmo guy, "There's something I have to tell you." He interrupts her and says, "There's something I have to tell you too. I love you." And she says, "This whole thing's a fake. I'm an actor and so is everyone else."
Man.
He was mortified, devastated, crushed, angry, everything you can imagine. So he called her the C word.
Come on.
And everyone's standing there in tuxes. It's supposed to be this big confetti moment. And all I hear is someone in a headset say, "Hold the balloon drop." because they didn't know what to do. It was really heavy.
Did they?
So they talked him off the ledge, and he came back and did what any of us, I suspect, would do in the same situation, which is say, I knew the whole time. I was just messing around with you guys.
Oh, man.
Yeah, pretty wild.
That must have been comfortable to watch.
Well, I'll tell you something. Anytime you have a spring-loaded secret in your throat that you can't tell, like we all had to sign $5 million don't you dare tell anybody confidentiality agreements.
Yeah.
And anytime there's something that you can't tell with those kind of stakes riding on it, man, it takes every fiber of your being to not ruin everything. Because, I mean, the first thing is, Jeremy, imagine tomorrow your name is Pete. And you have to remember when someone says Pete, you have to remember to turn around. That's already hard.
So, like, it's just a great idea that on paper that just didn't pan out because of all the possibilities that have to connect for it to work.
Well, I guess the thing is you can plan and plan and plan and plan, and then something completely unforeseen can derail the bus. One of the other red flags for the Jane Schmo was the character of Cammy, who was kind of the buxom blonde moron, was telling a story about being in high school. And she said, when I was in high school, everybody would say, Jana, why are you doing this? And one of the people was like, Jana? And she was like, Cammy. So she referred to herself anecdotally by her real life name.
Just clams all over the place.
Everywhere.
Wow.
This one from a Bob Makowitz. What instrument?
We love Bob.
Yeah, we do. Be money. What instrument's less necessary? A, guitar, or that harmonica hands-free headset? That's a Sophie's choice.
Yeah, that's the harmonica hands-free headset would be the OG version of the guitar, maybe, no? Because they're both like the guitar. I've never seen used without like laughing at the same time.
Well, that's the thing. I'm going to say for comedic value and because nobody loves a hybrid word more than this guy, I'm going to say the guitar is actually something I can get behind. So the harmonica hands-free headset.
It? What?
Literally.
As a Herbie Hancock or what?
I'm going to say the harmonica hands-free headset is less necessary.
Unless you're Bob Dylan, leave it at home.
Hey, finally, from Beav, who is the nicest celebrity you've ever met? And conversely, who is the least nice celebrity you've ever met?
The nicest celebrity I've ever met, would have to be Elvin Jones, for sure.
Really?
Drummer from John Coltrane.
Surprised you how?
Well, just because he was so humble and normal. But, I mean, iconic. I mean, there's like celebrity and then there's like John Coltrane's quartet. Which
right.
is just, it's like... It's like Jackie Robinson or something, you know what I mean? It's just this a next level thing, and that's when you would expect some kind of air of maybe some ego, but there was nothing there with Elvin. So I was floored by his personable nature as well as his sense of humor and his affable. You know, he had great sense of so funny. He would love to tell jokes, and he loved like Red Fox and Three Stooges and science fiction, like really weird science fiction novels.
Cool.
Just a really cool guy.
I'm going to say, generally speaking, the folks that have been around a long time tend to be pretty cool.
Yeah, and the ones that generally travel the globe a lot, he was, his wife was Japanese, and he spent a lot of time in Europe and around the globe. So, yeah, they kind of have an idea of people, period. But what about you for nicest celebrity you've ever met?
Well,
and I'm going to say Rita McNeil, but that's a guess. But how could she not be?
Oh, you were going to guess that was mine?
Yeah, but that's exempt, I think, just because she's so nice.
Anyway. Yeah, and universally adored.
Yeah.
So kind and shy and bashful.
Yeah, you got to pick another one.
It's a hard one. Like I say, a lot of people who've been around a long time are really nice. Jason Priestley has to be close to the top of the list, if not at the top. Kind, gracious, funny, easy to get along with. I worked with him on a show called Call Me Fitz, And I think it has to do with he was in that terrible car accident, race car accident.
Yeah, that's right.
To hear him tell it, the EMTs said, well, you know, I guess we should kind of scrape him up into this Sobeys bag and take him in the helicopter to cover our bases, to say we made the trip, but there's no way he's going to survive this. And I don't know if it's because he had a near-death experience and that's why he's so just happy to be here on the planet Earth. I suspect it's also kind of his DNA. He's just a really cool guy, no air about him whatsoever.
Interesting, though, from like, and he talk, you know, talk about being a superstar.
Yeah, and imagine how much attention that guy's had over the years, and to still be humble and kind and all those things. And the other name that came to mind is someone who's been really kind to me, and that's Jenny McCarthy.
Oh yeah,
she's friendly, authentic, helpful, thankful, kind. And she has gone out of her way to do nice things for me. Even if we don't talk for a couple of years, she'll surface out of nowhere with a job or just getting in touch. She is a dedicated mom, just a homegirl.
What's up with Chicago? Do you know the inside intel on why she left The View yesterday or whatever?
I only know what I read. I haven't spoken with her. I only know what I read, and it sounds like they fired Sherry.
And she's like, I'm going with her?
Yeah, and I don't know if, like, rumors were out there that The View was shopping around looking for a host to replace her, so I don't know if she's saying, you can't fire me, I quit. It's one of those things.
Yeah.
But the thing that I admire about her professionally is when her movie career stalls, she writes a book. When her career as an author kind of dries up, she sells a series. When her series ends, she, invents a product. She is a tireless, hard worker, and it's entirely born out of wanting to provide for her kid, because she's pretty much been a single mom for her kid's entire life. And, you and I as parents would have to agree that is, pretty noble.
Absolutely, for sure.
Okay, biggest jerk. There.
Biggest jerk. Ooh. Let me think. Do you have one off the top of your head?
No.
Because, because whenever you say biggest jerk, you're also throwing it out there and therefore throwing that person under the big bus.
It's true.
Of, like, you know, and I got no problems with doing it generally, but I don't know.
I haven't personally.
They have to be a really, like, they have to be so bad that you don't care.
Like, I worked on the Junos one year as a writer, and they always bring in American acts to kind of beef up the viewers, hopefully. There were a couple dudes from the Backstreet Boys. They weren't super nice.
Did they big time you?
Yeah, they big time me. And I was just going in as the writer to say, like, hey, guys, here's the copy. Anybody have any issues? We're happy to change it and make it work for you guys. And everybody was, pretty busy being important.
But that's, I guess, for that, like, whenever someone big times you, you can say that, because that's like an instantaneous, it's right there. Like, Flea from the Chili Peppers big time me one time.
Did he?
And it was actually interesting, because it was like, I was there, it was the Much Music Awards, and I was talking to Anthony Kiedis about something, and he was like, I didn't care to meet Flea, but Anthony's like, hey, Flea, come meet Jeremy, and Flea's like, whatever, like, that didn't even want to stop, like, just kept walking kind of thing, like, don't talk to me even about it, that feeling.
So was he big-timing Kiedis as well? It was a twofer?
Well, he was just big-timing the whole idea of,
the
like,
planet
anything.
Earth.
Yeah, so I was just like, well, that guy's not the most friendly guy in the world, and he's tiny. So maybe that's why.
Is he?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Hey, what song did I learn that he played bass on that surprised me in the last day?
You learned a Chili Peppers tune?
No.
Or another song?
No, I learned.
Alanis?
No, I learned that Flea played bass on a song I didn't realize he had. Do you know what the song was?
Which one?
Doom Dunk. Ka-dunk, dunk, dunk.
Da-doodle-doodle. Oh, yeah, no, I remember, because he's in the video.
Bust a Move.
Young MC.
Yeah. used to be
one of the cleanest. He's like a clean comic of rapper. He was a clean rapper. You could hear every word that guy said, eh?
Bust a Move used to be my go-to karaoke joint, but
no swearing either, like real clean.
Here's the problem with karaoke.
Okay, smarty, go to a party.
It's a good jam. I'm caught in the valley between what I want to perform as a secret would-be singer and what the people want to hear. The people don't want to hear me do The Lady in Red by Krista Berg. They want Footloose. No. That's what the people want. And if you're going to do karaoke, you're doing it for the people, almost like a public servant.
Do you have like a good karaoke jam that you've done story where you were like way too banged up?
Well, I used to host karaoke at Thirsty's Roadhouse in Cavendish, PEI.
Hosting means you got to get in there and
sing.
All right,
guys, here's Terry and Diane. They're going to do Summer Lovin' from the Grease soundtrack. Let's make some noise for them.
Or like when there's nobody, you got to cut through a few to make people feel like it's okay to come up, right?
So mine was always Private Dancer by Tina Turner. All the men come in these places, but nobody wants to hear a dude sing Private Dancer in an empty bar.
It's got to be a skit made of like the guy doing the, you know, like the arm leaning on the thing. Like, I got to do this because I'm paid to be here.
Oh, man.
I remember like seeing a guy do Lady by Kenny Rogers.
That's a good jam, too.
That's a good one.
If I'm being honest with you, I've even been known to do Wicked Game by Chris Isaak in an empty bar. That's rock bottom.
I did Neil Young really banged up in a bar thinking I could pull it off because it's Neil Young.
Which
but by
tune?
The time it was in the States, so it was probably like Old Man or Heart of Gold or something, but it was like it just wasn't working out. So
Heart of Gold's a feel good jam.
Yeah, but it's still you think it's easy.
We were staying at a campground. We were staying at a campground in cottages in January in Florida, and I was there with my wife and children and a bunch of folks over 80, and they have a karaoke night by the pool, and nobody was singing. And my wife sold me down the river. She said, "You got to get up there and sing a song for the people because nobody's singing." So next thing I knew, I was up there singing "Daniel" by Elton John.
Oh my God.
And giving shout outs to the seniors, like, come on, Teresa, you know this one. Sing it with
me. Come on, we're singing about a guy who can't see. Everybody's got issues. Come on up here.
They claim to not know the song.
They claim to not know it. Maybe you should have got some.
But these people were so old. These people would be like Nana Muscuri, like Helen Reddy.
No, fans. Even that's no. They were probably like hit me with some like some freaking fat what's
some
his name Fabian
some Bobby Darin fans.
Yeah, some from Frank. What's his face? Frankie Valli. Hit me with some Paul Anka.
Unless you mean his brother Lee, who had like tools and doorknobs.
Remember Leahy singing that stuff, stuff he was into? That would be it for sure.
Let's take a break on TNT. When we come back, we'll talk about how school's out for summer and a couple of summer memories before we go. Hang on. There you go. That's my brand new J-Rock jam, Clap Your Turd Cutter.
I have heard that, and the verses are pretty heavy duty.
They're pretty sick. Do you want to hear a few seconds of a verse?
Yeah, could we do that?
All right, here it comes. Get off the couch and turn around, huh? Make a clap, I want to hear that sound, huh? Them pants are smuggling, toucan hands, and my eyes straight fucking like Toucan Sam. I want to name check Toucan Sam. Remember from Fruit Loops?
Oh yeah, the best is it's there's so much info. I mean, there's verses and verses and verse. How did you write it? Obviously, first.
Yeah, it's pretty dense. Hang on one sec. Here comes some more. That butt should be on Instagram, huh? I want to hit it. That's my master plan, huh? Tap it like a sugar maple make scissor. Show up for the late shift to watch it twerk. There you go.
I love it. Instagram.
Yeah. The thing is, I'm recording the vocals in my laundry room on the same mic that I use for our little podcast, and my 4-year-old daughter's trying to shove like plastic vegetables under the door and like sending a little salad into me and wanting to have a tea party and stuff. It's the unlikeliest juxtaposition, but it kind of says where I'm at in my life right now.
That's recording amazing.
Clappy turd cut in the laundry room.
I love that. I thought you did it like in the studio somewhere.
No, there's a guy named Blaine Morris who helped me build the beat and stuff. But the funny thing is about making a comedy song, it still has to work musically. It still has to sound like a good song in that genre.
It does.
So, well, it's rough. It's not finished yet.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty happy with Clappy Turd Cutta. And we shot a little video on the set of Trailer Park Boys on the last day. And some local folks brought their turd cutters over and clapped them.
They are heavily clapped, and it's summertime, and school is out. And I have to tell you, I went to pick up my boys on
they're done.
Thursday, half day. So I was going, it was 11 o'clock, and I was going to grab them. And I could see one of them sitting down, waiting already for me, and he comes running as fast as he can, and I hear, "Freedom! Freedom! Freedom!
No!
Freedom!" Full on, like, just booking it. I was so excited. It was classic. It was hilarious.
From what grade?
Funny. Well, he's just finished grade 3, so... Or grade...
I know. Imagine being so elated to be out of the hooks of grade 3. Like, grade 3 is still fun.
He's getting ready for grade 3, so no, he's just finished grade 2, but it was a heady year for him. He was loving it, but he's had enough, or he's ready to go for summertime, get some sun and good times.
Freedom.
Yes.
Unreal. I do remember that feeling, though. I was thinking about that the other day as I drove by somebody mowing their lawn. And you know, in June, when it starts to get warm, it starts to feel lighter later, and your teacher would open your classroom window and the smell of fresh cut grass would waft in. It's just torturous to make kids sit in a classroom in June.
Oh, absolutely. It's crazy. But the feeling of, like you said, that I think I'm just starting to get that feeling of being old enough to not remember it, but you still get it a little bit of seeing everybody rush and the kids so excited and amped. It's the best.
Did you, were you a camp kid?
I went camping once with my family and once at school, so not really. But we did go up to Wasega Beach a couple times.
Oh, nice.
That was kind of the spot that the Taggarts would congregate in the late 70s.
You blew a few darts and listened to some Max Webster?
Oh, for sure. That was it. Like sitting in here and my dad and my, you know, grandparents and uncles and cousins and everybody around with the stubby bottles of beer, chatting, laughing it up. Good times.
It was in the summer that I snuck into my very first concert in Sherwood, Prince Edward Island, and I snuck in through the open Zamboni door at the Sherwood Sportsplex to catch the last part of Charlie Pride's set.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was wild. And I remember hearing the crystal chandelier lights up the paintings on the wall.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, it's a great tune. And what a soulful singer that guy is.
And there's not much of a, there's not a better summer than a PEI summer.
I'm going to say that PEI is the best place to be in Canada in the summer. And I know it's a controversial statement because there are a lot of places in Canada that's pretty great to be in the summer, including Northern Canada, where they have 24-hour daylight. That's a wild experience if you've never been.
Yeah, sure.
There are obviously lake culture in Quebec and Ontario and even Winnipeg.
Yeah. No, great lakes.
Not to mention like your Tofinos. Like, it is an incredible country we live in.
Yes.
And this on the eve of Canada Day, I know Canadianity is one of the things that we both pride ourselves in. But man, just seeing some of the unrest around the world, if you needed another reason to be thankful for the place we call our home, I sure am.
Yes. We love our resources and hope we keep them.
Yes. And God bless the Canada. Absolutely. And God bless you, Jeremy Taggart.
And God bless you, Jonathan Torrance.
I'll talk to you next week.
All right, bud.
Take care, bud.
Take care, bud.
Hey, do me a favor and say hi to the family and the neighbors and all that. And give Ronnie my best, will you?
I will for sure. Well, you know, we'll get Maybe we'll get Ronnie on the line next week, eh? And don't
forget to... Yeah, wouldn't that
be fun? What's that?
I said, wouldn't that be fun? Because our buddy Tim from the rock combo, the Arkells, has been out on the road in support of their new album and new single, which is awesome.
It is.
And he's back around next week, so maybe we'll get to do some more call-in pranks and call Ronnie and things like that.
Absolutely. Great to talk to you, bud.
In the meantime, great to talk to you, bud. Those of you listening, go out and buy the Arkells' new track. It's killer.
And follow us on the Twitter machine.
Taggart and Torrance. I'm out like I stole something. Peace.
Fucking right, eh?
That's what's cracking.